shots in the pool. That is not cool. I need the tool. Take me to school. Feet first into this league. Me first. That cannot be. Under the underdog Monica G. Feeling a whole lot better suddenly. I get in with it. Winning again. You're 1-2 in the bag and I'm going for 3. That is the beat down. Got it the best.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 195 of Dynasty Underdog. I'm your host, Uriah Dawkins. With me tonight, Billy Beeman. Jake Hornbloom, that's at Willie Beeman FF, and at JJ Abrams. What's going on, guys?
Excited for the show. Big shout out to all of the new subscribers to the YouTube channel. Just wanted to say that, man. Really appreciate the support there.
Yeah. Thank you to everyone who's watching all the videos that we drop, all the live streams that we have. Really appreciate you.
Let's hop into some news and nonsense. Obviously, not a ton of news right now. We got rookie mini camps going on, so there's tons of like hype videos out there, dudes making amazing throws with, like, you know, no defenders or no distractions, but it's fun nonetheless.
Kirk Cousins looks like he's back from the Achilles injury already, huh?
Yeah, you know, his leg looks
better than Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, more muscular than Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I did notice.
He's a bit younger, so it makes sense.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
Didn't his injury occur after Rodgers?
Yes. Like,
yes.
A good bit after? Yeah, yeah, I mean, I guess the youth, yeah, it's a big deal.
It's fair. Yeah, it's a huge deal.
That muscular atrophy, man.
We know all about that. We know all about that.
Not taking care of our bodies. Yeah.
I tweaked my pinky toe on the stairs the other day, and it's been like 3 weeks, you know, the other day. It's been like 3 weeks. That would have been gone in like, you know, a day back in college. So, yeah, it's, yeah, I'm feeling it.
I think I saw Uriah post a tweet about how he now goes to the doctor. It was like a meme about going to the doctor now. You just talk about all the ailments that you don't have because
yes.
You have so many other ailments.
Makes the conversation quicker.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Oh, shoot. All right, so the biggest news in the NFL was Jared Goff. He did get an extension, I think 4 years, 170 guaranteed. You know, Dan Campbell biting the kneecaps and all that stuff has truly worked out there, you know, to put together a pretty good team. And they want to lock in their franchise quarterback. So wheels up Goff, you know, I'm happy for him.
Yeah, gotta feel good as a dynasty manager if you're rostering Goff, that's for sure. But whew, that is that's a hefty deal for them. I wonder how that's gonna play out in terms of, you know, building out the roster, but I'm sure they feel comfortable with what they have. So yeah, like you gotta be happy they feel like he's the guy and he can take them to, you know, I guess elevate that team a little bit further than they already have gone. So yeah, I dig it.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for them is just not resetting the market. So not paying him above everyone else. And they were able to do that. So, you know, they kind of lock in that rate for the next 4 years, which really puts them, I think, in a pretty competitive standpoint because we already know the NFLPA basically fights for more cap almost every single year. So that cap hit will look less and less as the years go on.
All right. Next one, Billy's got a clip from Twitter, X, formerly Twitter. Go ahead and play.
I don't know what it is, man. I'm not saying like I'm some guru or some receiver, like GOAT, that just, but I know routes when I see them. I know football players.
Well, you've played with like 5 Pro Bowl wide receivers. At this
exactly. Point. So like when I watched him, like at first I was like, okay, he's good. Cause I seen him at Arizona State. And then his first year of Florida was okay. But this last year, bro, he put it together. Mm. And bro, when I tell you, I don't know what, like it's like Tank. Like, you can't just put one, like, it's everything combined. Mm. Like, I just text my boy, one of my best friends. He's always with me. And I tell him, like, dang, they got Pearsall. I wanted him bad. Like, dude.
I love that clip. I really love that clip, man. And I like how he's talking about how, you know, he doesn't know how to explain it. But it's when they put it all together. And it's just interesting because I do think from like a film perspective, somebody who breaks down film, I really feel what he's talking about there. You know what I mean? But I guess what I want to ask is because he clearly has an eye for this, right? Like he's an NFL quarterback. He knows what he's looking at. He was talking about Tank Dell last year. Tank Dell ended up being a really, really good player. Do we put a lot of stock into what he's saying here about Ricky Pearsall? Like, does that matter to you given what we saw from Tank Dell and you know, the prophecy kind of came true.
I think the biggest thing here is that it's like almost the antithesis of coach speak. This player has almost no relationship to Ricky Pearsall whatsoever. And he's going out on a limb to basically stand up for a dude who has no correlation or relationship to him whatsoever. And I think in the grand scheme of things, it shouldn't necessarily you know, be something where he jumps, you know, 4, 5, 6 ranks for you personally. But, you know, maybe now in that tier that you have him in, maybe you're starting to question one or two spots because of these types of things that you hear from other players. And that's kind of how I take away these types of moments where players kind of come out and speak about other players in a positive way. What about you guys?
Yeah, I think it would mean a little bit more if Pierre Solz actually ended up with CJ Stroud, because I don't know that if Tank Dell went to San Francisco, like, that matters as much of what CJ Stroud thinks. And what CJ Stroud thinks about Pierre Solz doesn't really matter, because he won't be throwing him the ball. The team may not like Pierre Solz as much as CJ Stroud does, although they did spend a lot of draft capital to get him. I think it just would mean a little bit more to me personally if the guy making the statement was the guy dictating whether or not he's going to get the ball.
So if this was Purdy making the statement, you'd be all over it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Big difference, right? So.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I mean, I just thought it was interesting because Tank Dell was a guy who not a lot of people were touting as a really high-end prospect, and Stroud is a guy who picked him out. And I think Pierre Solz is another guy who is definitely not, I think, in the same world as a Tank Dell, but maybe just more prospects are getting a little bit more light, you know, that are not as, I guess, that don't pop off the spreadsheets as much, right? Especially early on. And he obviously got better draft capital than Tank Dell, but I see a lot of similarities there. And I myself didn't even like Pierre Solz that much, but this does kind of, I'm like, you know what? I mean, a lot of people are seeing something in this guy. And yeah, you don't want to put too much stock into it, but I think what Jake's saying there, you know, within that tier could be a, you know, push you over the edge a little bit. It's news and nonsense, man. I'm bringing nonsense. What do you want?
No, it's good. No, I like it. I mean, that clip for sure is just makes you feel good. Like, I want to see more active NFL players react to the draft picks. Like, I think that's just amazing content. Like, that's the kind of stuff I like to consume. So I love it. Yeah, it is news and nonsense. But I think I'd be more moved about the prospect if it was like, oh, this is the guy throwing him the ball. Like, he loves him. I'd have more wheels up on the whole thing.
Yeah, that's fair. I almost feel the exact opposite, to be honest. It's funny because I find that those types of things, when they come out publicly, it almost feels like a PR stunt rather than the truth. And I think with the Tank Dell situation, the funny thing about it was that we didn't really know about CJ Stroud pushing that narrative until, you know, a few days after, whereas this is a live reaction, basically. Like, he's sitting there in the studio talking about Ricky Pearsall as he's getting drafted, and he's just like, oh damn, like, I'm so upset that he just went. And like, that means a lot, because it's literally just off the cuff, right? Like, there's no reason for him to react so energized. But at the end of the day, you know, he's not a scout. He doesn't necessarily know everything that he's looking for, and he doesn't know how players are necessarily going to fit into schemes or other offenses. But I do think it is, if I was Ricky Pearsall and I knew that the community wasn't necessarily that high on me, like, man, I'd feel really good about myself knowing that CJ Stroud thought I was fired. Like if he put me up in like the top wide receivers of this draft class, like, all right, that's going to spark a fire under my ass to be pretty good this upcoming year. So I think at bare minimum, it does that.
All right, so here's something you put out. I think this is console war trade. So right now we're doing the rookie draft for console wars, which we talked about many, many, many times on this podcast. 36 teams, 3 copies. And we've seen a ton of trades, as we normally do this time of year. And I'm guessing you guys want to kind of break these up and figure out if there's any correlation between when the trades are being made, what the trades are getting made for, at what spots, and if there's teardrops based upon this information.
Definitely wanted to talk a little bit, wanted to rehash the teardrop conversation a little bit, like where the tiers, kind of the thresholds are. And I think we could obviously do that by walking through like our rankings pretty easily. But I do think that, you know, what Jake pulled up here is a pretty unique way in looking at it, especially with this large draft we have going on. Jake, you want to take us through it a little bit?
Sure. So, you know, we've been having this conversation, specifically the three of us, as we've kind of walked through our own rankings process this offseason and post-draft or post-NFL draft, sitting there looking at the different tiers has been kind of educational, I think, more than anything else. And one of the biggest things that we've really noticed, specifically in Console Wars, is that like major tier break at the 108. Like, I think that's like the big spot. So between the 108 and the 109, you're now talking about the JJ McCarthy's, Brock Bowers kind of group tearing off to the Xavier Worthy, Ladd McConkey, Brian Thomas Jr., Bo Nix, John the Brooks. Like, that group is kind of that, we'll call it pseudo second tier, although I don't necessarily think that the first eight is necessarily its own tier. I think that's also probably cut in its own groupings, but we don't need to get into it that granularly. The big thing that I've noticed specifically from this Console Wars League has been the really strong cutoff of folks trying to trade up into the top 2-3, and then folks trying to trade up into the 8. I think there's a lot of folks that have tried to, and we saw that the clock actually sat at the 108, those three picks, for so long. And then we then saw a group of the 109 to the 112 go right off the board. I think we ended up seeing close to 7 trades in that group. And the biggest thing that I noticed was the willingness to trade future firsts for a late first this upcoming year. Sorry, current late first for future firsts. And that has been the biggest strategy, the biggest way for a lot of teams to get out of the late first round. And just kind of wanted to see like what your thoughts were, guys, with regards to that specific teardrop and whether or not that was worth, you know, that future first in your minds. It's specifically, some of them are even like future first and future seconds for, you know, the 109, sometimes even the 111. And yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I pulled it up here on the screen a little bit. And I mean, this kind of gets into one of the topics that we were talking, where they were going to talk about, and under the hood a little bit, trading for future picks, right? Which I think is a super viable strategy right now in terms of gaining value heading into the future. And Jake's obviously talking about it here. I pulled it up on the screen. You can kind of see what we're talking about, where some people were able to pull off either a late pick in this draft plus a second, or like he's saying, you know, future picks plus that extra capital. And I think that's just a great way, because people, they often overestimate how well they're going to do the next year, right? They try to plan for being a contender, but they, you know, we're not great at predicting what's going to happen. And, you know, I had this happen, I think, a year ago, where I traded out one of my picks out of the early first for a 25 first. And it ended up being a really, like, I think 102, 103. And I ended up trading that for CeeDee Lamb and ended up winning the league. And so it became a really, really valuable strategy to look ahead to the future and reach for those picks. Now, I think people are starting to catch on a little bit more in this league, but you still see it happen here. So I do think, you know, reaching back to where the teardrops are, I agree that you can see that happening with the trades in this league, right? Around that late first. And you look right at our tiers and our Dynasty Underdog tiered rankings, our 2024 rookie rankings. At that 109 spot, it hits tier 3 players. That's the first time it hits tier 3 players, right? And so I think you can still work within that area. And I think really for me, that's the first teardrop. And then when I kind of go down the list here, I think the next teardrop for me, just speaking directly to kind of rankings, it's about that seven, it's about like the 20th pick, really, is where we start seeing like tier 4 players. But up until then, we're like in tier 1, 2, 3 players for all positions. But after that is where things really start falling off for me. So that's kind of how I view it. Anything to add, Uriah?
I was on mute. No, I say I don't have a lot to add there. Just I think it was interesting to see the activity that I think Jake pointed out. People trying to get in that 108 range. And then so I think, you know, with the three copies, there's actually options there, right? You know, if there's a 112 team league, you don't have the option of taking either Bowers or JJ McCarthy or Xavier Worthy. Like, one of those guys is gone. So here people are just really trying to give up a little bit to try to get that last, you know, like blue chip rookie type pick right there. Because right after 108, 109, it is a little bit easier. You could tell people are a little bit less likely to want to trade up into there. So,
but, and I mean, what I will say is I don't think it's that, from my experience, it hasn't been that expensive to get up from the 1, 9, 10, 11 range into the top tier. So I also think it's a really viable strategy to do that. Like, you can easily trade a late second, a third sometimes, and get up there, future second, and get up there if you wanted. And sometimes even less, swapping. I think what I did in one league was swapping a second and third round picks and jumped up like two spots. But, you know, for me, jumping up from the one, I think it was the 111 maybe 110 to the 108, like, that's actually a pretty big jump in terms of tiers, right? So, you know, when I'm looking at it there, like, that's definitely the most stark tier drop, I think, in the draft. But I do think that, I mean, it does certainly get shaky in the middle of the second, but it really, really drops off, I think, after kind of the Ben Sennett, Keon Coleman, Michael Penix, Ricky Pearsall range. Right after that, I mean, if you want to add Xavier Legette in there, you can. But even then, I think we're stretching the tier a little bit too far, if we're being honest with ourselves. So that's kind of how I view it. We do have a listener question here. Would you give up the 107 and a next year second for the 104 this year? You know, I would, Jake, thoughts?
Absolutely. I think that's actually really cheap to move up those three spots, specifically because I think you're actually cutting off into this world at the 104, depending on who's there, especially in Superflex. In my opinion, between pretty key elite quarterbacks and or wide receivers, between that next like micro tier. And I think that that's easily worth a second, in my opinion. Funny enough, we actually saw that in one of the leagues that I commissioned, where it was a post-draft trade of the 105 for the 107, and they added a second onto it. I think that's really cheap. And it was a weird post-drafted player trade that you don't typically see. But hey, if you can get extra value on your player, then I guess go for it.
Yeah, it's interesting talking about, like, we talked about the tier drop at, like, the 109 and, like, kind of at the back end of the second there. But talking about it, like, really right there at the top, it's interesting because we've seen Drake May fall enough to the 107 that is, like, depending on what you're trying to do, like, do you really need to do this? But it's the only way you're getting Jaden Daniels. So that's one thing to mention, right? Like, if your target is Jaden Daniels, there's no other way you're getting him. So I think that that's obviously the strategy. And then came back, wait, yeah, I agree. I can get Neighbors top three already picked. Oh, I mean, yeah. If you're getting Neighbors at the 104, yeah, it's a smash for sure.
Easy
deal. So yeah, love that for you. And yeah, definitely the second next year is inconsequential at that point. So yeah, I dig it.
One quick thing I did want to bring up just really briefly. I think it was the last Superflex Super Show with John Hogue and Tommy Blair. Funny enough, we actually have an item from Tommy later in the show. Yeah. Thanks for being on a few weeks back. They were speaking a little bit about how they think the best time to trade up in drafts actually is pre-draft. They're talking, you know, a few weeks before the actual draft is happening, they find that the picks are a little bit cheaper than they are necessarily on the clock. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't think that's necessarily true in this console war situation because of the way that it's set up. Knowing that you have so much flexibility with who's on the clock and how the board is falling instead of, you know, a standard league where you have one copy, mm-hmm. Here you kind of can fluctuate with different owners versus necessarily with only one owner who has that same pick. What do you guys thought?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a little bit easier. I think in general, I kind of disagree with trying to position yourself in the rookie draft pre-draft. It's a lot easier to do that when you kind of have an idea of a name associated with that pick or draft slot, especially, you know, 2-3 weeks after the NFL draft, where essentially right now, you know, the 105 isn't the 105 anymore. Like, we pretty much have a pretty good idea who that is now. So I think it's a little bit easier, safer, definitely, just to go ahead and make those moves after the NFL draft. But to your point with the league, like the three copy league, there's more flexibility there. I still think it would be post-draft. It makes more sense.
I mean, post-draft and during the actual rookie draft, I find it a lot easier to decide what I'm trying to do. Like, I even got an offer while it was like 5 or 6 picks before me about moving back. And I'm like, I need to see what's there personally. I mean, sometimes you can get a deal done and move back and it's still worth it. Like, if you can kind of foresee what's happening on the board, but I like kind of really seeing how things play out. I like to be as patient as possible in drafts. You've probably seen that with some of the startups we've done. I'll make trades for sure sometimes, but I try to be as patient and let things kind of fall to me. And especially in a multi-copy league, I think that is enhanced. I'm totally willing to sit back because there's a lot more potential for mistakes to be made, right? Like that's how I feel about it. And makes sense. And the board gets a little convoluted, I think, when it's not, you know, a 1 through 12 pick. It's 1 through 36. A lot's going on. A lot of moves are being made. People are trying to do specific things for their team. They're you know, picking based on need sometimes, not necessarily based on value. And so in this kind of format, I think it's highlighted. And then when we're talking about it, is a super flex side and premium standard in terms of that. It's a 36 team league, 3-copy league, 3-division that serve as pretty much 3 separate leagues is how they kind of play out throughout the year. So it's not too much different, but the trading market is completely different because you have so many more options, so many more managers to trade with and all that. So just throwing it out there, what we're talking about and why it's unique. So there's that.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the segment. We'd like to do this typically when Jake's here with us. Underdog under the hood. The things we think about when we should be thinking about our wives.
Oh, man, that hits too. That's too real. So that accurate. Hits home. Oh, my goodness.
I hate that so much.
Yeah.
So what are you guys' thoughts on the perceived value weakness of players when the players are on the block?
Yeah, I actually posted this one to the group, and this has been an issue that I've actually been having of late, and I've been talking to Billy about this a little bit offline for about 3 months now. So the reason I posted this is I do find that when you initially state that a player is for sale, that means that player is sold at a discount to others. And I don't know why that's the perception. Instead of just, you know, fair market value for a player, the assumption is, oh, this person wants to get rid of them. That means that I can get a deal for them. Whereas what I, and the reason I wanted to bring this up is because I do think that there's this kind of larger grandiose manipulation you can kind of do with this process. And the way that I see it is I kind of tier players on my own teams together. And so if I put a player that, let's say, is at a specific tier on the block, I know that it can potentially attract a specific type of buyer looking for that type of tier player. And if I know I want to get rid of another player in that tier, I can then kind of reposition whatever their offer is, regardless if it's at a discount or not, back to the player that I actually want to get rid of. But the way that I'm seeing it now is with the view that I'm now getting that player off my roster that I initially want to get rid of because, you know, the perception was that I want to get rid of player A, but I think player A and player B are kind of neck and neck, but I think that player B technically yeah. can be sold at a discount. You know what I mean? And that's kind of my logic behind it. But I did want to know, like, for the two of you, have you seen that same perceived value weakness for players that are on the block?
Definitely. Definitely. I've definitely seen the weakness you're speaking of. I haven't keyed in on this little micro strategy that you've kind of carved out here. Where you're masking your intentions, right? I could find a way to work my tweet in here, but I replied to somebody else on Twitter. It's talking about masking your intentions is super key, and I think this is a great way of doing it. Where you're like, yeah, I know what you guys are gonna think of me putting these players on the block. You think I want to get rid of them, and they're kind of fragile assets, obviously at this point, ones that you can attack me on. So then I'm going to basically turn it on its head. And now that I know you're interested in this player, I have a player similar to this that I view as a worse player that I can now get off for value that is more than what it would be otherwise, right? Like that is a fantastic ring around the rosy that you're playing with this person, like with the league, right? Like I think that's a really, really great strategy that almost nobody's going to pick up on because they're going to just think of it as like a negotiation tactic. So yeah, I love that. I actually try to avoid putting players on the trade block most of the time. If anything, I'm going to try to like go use them in a combo deal or something and try to mask it that way where it's like, I'm not trying to just sell them off, but I'm trying to like, you know, some package deal that makes it a little more worth the other manager's while. But this is a really heady play. I like this a lot. Uriah, you got any thoughts on that?
I mean, no, you kind of nailed what I was going to say about putting players on the block. Like I found exactly what Jake is talking about, as perception, when you do play a player on the block, like, oh, okay, I could come get them. Like this is some sort of fire sale instead of being like, hey, you know, I'm interested in trading for this guy. But I think it leads to like a ton of shitty offers that I don't want to deal with. So I don't personally use a trade block a whole ton. Next one. Should you be buying future picks now? And how do you go about doing this?
Yeah, I kind of touched on it, so I'll let you guys jump in here if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest answer is, yeah, you should be trading for them now because they're never going to be any cheaper. You know, 25 picks aren't going to be cheaper than they are like right now today. And, you know, it's not a very sexy answer, but the best way to do it is by moving around in your rookie drafts. Move down a couple spots, pick up a future second. You could get future seconds so cheap right now. And the best way to do it is just to kind of tear down a little bit in your rookie drafts.
Yeah, I don't want to bring up necessarily all of the back end work that Tommy Blair does, but he manipulates his spreadsheets really well to be able to kind of better define how teams are going to be producing in their upcoming seasons, where their value is at, understand value on other teams. I think you can do this pretty easily on, you know, resources like Dynasty Daddy, where you can understand what the general points per game is going to look like for an individual team. Kind of understand for yourself who those bottom six teams are going to be, because they're probably going to lock in somewhere between there and maybe they'll max out at like bottom eight. Like, okay. And then you can find yourself in a situation where you're trying to trade for something between the 101 to the 108 and potentially get significantly more value off of that 111 that you're trading away this year. You can say whatever you want about the 2025 class, but at the end of the day, the picks are going to accrue value as time goes on and as we get closer to the next draft. And it's one of those things like clockwork that when you do put together enough draft capital, you can then actually trade those players or those future assets away for legitimate players. And to not get into too much, but I did something similar to that in Console Wars, where I basically traded away six future assets, unknowns potentially, for CJ Stroud and Sam Laporta. And I think I put myself in a really good situation to actually get, you know, elite assets versus what ifs. And we'll talk a little bit more about that trade in the trades and what ifs section, but just wanted to bring that up because I do think that that's kind of how I think about how I should be buying future assets.
All right. The next one kind of speaks to us on the human side of things. Billy probably won't have a whole lot to say about this because he doesn't care.
I put this on the sheet.
So hypocritical and backwards.
Oh my God.
All right, but the question is, what is your feeling of sparing an opponent you think isn't as sharp?
Has anybody had this feeling?
I do all the time. Like,
you know, all the time. All right, wow. That's you know, pretty.
Not that I think that they're not as sharp, but like, I don't know. Like, I still feel bad. Like when I have like a really big win, I don't know why, but I do. Maybe I should sit this one out.
This is like a really weird conversation, right? Because it's like when you find like a mark in your league, right? Somebody who you feel like you can take advantage of. You like, I can feel sometimes like it can ruin the league if you constantly, you know, just ravage this opponent's roster and kill it. But also like, why should I have any mercy for my opponents, right? So it's like, at what point, what is the balance though? Like, so it's I know it's really just kind of like this moral conversation, right? It's not even really strategy or dynasty theory or anything like that. But I do think it's something that you deal with. Like, do you just push through that and you send the offer and you don't care? Or have you ever kind of pulled back the reins a little bit on that?
I think like the biggest thing that I like to perceive is overall squad strength. I know that's kind of ridiculous, but I'm also conscientious as a participant of the league that if there is a team that is that bad, we might not find an orphan. Like, there are plenty situations where if we ravage a specific roster, we could be at a spot where this league is just kind of sitting there with one less owner and we don't know how to move forward. With that being said, I still absolutely take advantage of these situations when they have assets that I'm looking for, and even more so future assets that I'm looking for. I do think that sometimes those types of owners do throw away future assets way too easily, which is why they kind of find themselves in the situations that they are. And yeah, I'd be lying to myself if I said I don't take it.
Let me take it a step further. What if it's like your like personal friend? Do you care anymore if it was somebody that you know personally?
See, I would actually feel more comfortable taking advantage of somebody I know It's like, fuck him. Like,
I'm gonna look you in your face and take advantage of you. All right?
Like, I used to eat like, you know, cookies and ice cream over, you know, at your mom's house. Like, I don't care like about your fantasy team. I'm gonna do my best. But if it's like someone that's just like a stranger in our leagues and like maybe they're new to Dynasty, like the whole purpose of the pod to begin with at the very beginning was to like to help people not getting taken advantage of. And so I feel bad.
Now, you know, DU5 is just going to be like eating, you're going to be the piranha just eating
his guppies.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Joe, I like this comment though. Unless you're the commissioner and the fish, I love that the fish is a friend. I do feel like you got to have a conversation with him and make sure he's an informed consenting adult, which is a great way to put it, I love that. I do think that's actually fair, kind of, though, because, like, if you do realize something over time and it is, and, like, especially, like, I'll speak for our listener leagues, I guess, we, like, know each other at this point. Like, we talk to each other all the time in the Discord. Like, probably would be worth just, like, being like, yo, like, checking out values. Like, do you know, like, you need, like, an ADP resource? Like, you need anything, bro? Because, like, your values are a little off and I want to make sure that you're getting the most. I don't know, like, is that, like, touching collusion? Should you leave it alone? Like, now we're going to a whole different conversation, I feel like, right? Because you don't want to offer too much help either. This is a competition. And they did willingly join the league.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's really dependent on the league. And so I kind of have this weird caveat league that I'll just bring up really quickly. Basically, it's all newbies. No one's played Dynasty before except for myself, which you would say, hey, that's really unfair. You're just a shark with a bunch of guppies, right? But the reality is, like, I literally created that league to help others like try and play in an environment that would be competitive, but I wouldn't necessarily go out and just, you know, crush them. Now, here's the thing is that I went into this league and we ended up being in a situation where they completely derailed my entire draft strategy because they were so rookie heavy. And I just took the board as it came, and now I just have like an ultra stack team. And I find myself looking at the roster like, I almost want to tear it down so that I can compete, you know, in the future. But here's the issue, right? No one wants to give up their future picks. Like, I can't get rid of these studs on my team. Like, we're talking about CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson. We're talking about Jordan Love, Dak Prescott, Mark Andrews. Like, these guys cannot get off my roster for the life of me. Because no one wants to get off of future picks. And they've already paid into the future. That's the best part. And so I just find myself right now, like, looking at it like, I guess I have to win. And I don't want to take advantage of it. But, like, I think it really is stuck in that spot where, you know, you do need to understand context. And the reason I bring that up is because I have sent over all those resources to everybody. And yeah, we've had some really terrible trades in this league. Like, I mean, legitimately some of the worst trades you've ever seen in Dynasty. Like, I wish I was joking. We just had another one that happened. It was Baker Mayfield for Jermaine Burton, who got drafted the 312 and a late 2025 third. Like, the guy's team is built to compete this year. And I'm just like, yo, what's going on? Like, tell me, like, how are you doing okay? And if you're not doing okay, like, just tell me the truth. Like, I will walk you through this trade and why it's not good for your team. And so, like, it is a weird slippery slope, but I do think, like, it has to be determined on the league. And if your league isn't like that, like, you can't go too far into it. But in this league, it really is. Like, I'm just trying to be as educational as possible. I'm trying to do the hard work that you guys have been doing for 4+ years now. And, like, I gotta say, I don't know how you've done it for as long as you have, because, like, I'm 2 months in and I feel like I'm going bald by now.
There are trials and tribulations for sure, man. And you're doing it with people you know. We're doing it with, you know, people from the community, which has been really great. But you run into some jokers every once in a while, you know what I mean? But no, it's great work you're doing, because honestly, like you said it, like, what we want to do is get more people into Dynasty. We want to help people do better in Dynasty. That's the whole idea. And that's why I'm bringing this conversation up, because I do have those feelings of like remorse at times where I'm like, oh man, I'm sorry, I gotta do it to you. You know, it's like, gotta put you down now. Like, but you got to do it at some level. But I will say, like, I definitely pulled back sometimes where I'm like, just not today. Maybe another day. And I generally come back and take a swing at it, but I do, it hits me in the feels. But we'll leave it with this. Joe, last comment. Out in the wild, it's National Geographic time. You're absolutely right. All right. You got to be a shark out there. So survival of the fittest.
Next one, missing early in post-startup rookie draft, versus consequences of missing hard in year 2 or 3.
Yeah, Jake, you kind of brought this up and I threw it on you. I think you were texting me maybe about this, and I found it like a really interesting concept, and I wanted you to kind of walk us through it if you could. You were talking about like the consequences of missing early in a post-startup rookie draft versus missing hard in year 2 or 3 with a rookie draft. So if we just had, you know, when we just did like a startup and have our first rookie draft ever a couple months after versus the consequences of missing down the road in like the rookie draft in year 2, 3, whatever, maybe.
Gotcha. I actually think this was in context of myself. I think I was shitting on myself when I first started playing Dynasty. I definitely did not do the due diligence and research, specifically in DU2, which, you know, has been an absolute wildfire of a league. But the reason I was bringing this up is because I question the process in which the impact of a specific rookie draft has the most bearing on a specific team makeup. And obviously there's a lot of things that are happening outside of that draft. I'm very conscientious of that. And so, you know, you can go from year one having potentially 6 overall picks because you drafted them in that first startup versus having 0 in year 2 because you traded all your picks away. But I think the reality is more so we're talking, let's just compare.
Okay, yeah.
Year 1, you have 4 picks and you get 1 in each round. Year 2, you have 4 picks, you have 1 in each round. And what do we think the overall consequences are to the general impact of your roster as you move forward? And I think of this really interestingly, listening to a lot of other analysts speak about the work that they do and strategy, because I think the valuation of players and the roster spots that we have are so valuable. And so do we think getting off of those early players, you know, in year one is an easier thing to get off of versus the significant impact of, let's say, those 4 picks in year 2, where they might not be as easy to get off of due to the general, I wouldn't call it stagnation, but the way in which the league kind of evens out post-startup. This is what goes on in my mind when I'm texting Billy randomly at like 12 o'clock at night.
Well, if I'm understanding you, which I may not be, the thing that stands out to me is like, if I had to choose it between missing my rookie drafts or my rookie drafts picks not hitting, I'd rather them not hit the first time around.
Yeah.
Because you just did your startup. You should have a decent team if you drafted well. Hopefully you did. But, you know, looking at year 2 or 3, there's a whole lot more need for those rookie picks. Because those are what are going to keep you going on to do the whole damn thing. If you did it right, you're probably not really counting on those rookie picks your first year of a startup. But by the time 3 years is gone, that's a lot of age on your roster right there. If you haven't moved them, depending on how you've traded and manipulated your team, if it's still the exact same group of people, they're all 3 years younger or older. Some of them are either not going to get another contract or they haven't panned out or whatever. So like, I think the importance of hitting after on your year 2, 3 is a little bit more important, because if you start missing year after year after year, like, it's just, you're going to be in no man's land there. I think you could afford to miss out or miss with way less consequence your first time around.
Yeah, this is a great conversation, and I think you guys both covered most of it for sure. I do think that it's a lot easier to get out from under your misses early on year one. Like you guys said, you should have a lot more to work with. But also, like what Jake pointed out, I think is really poignant, is first of all, like, the picks are easier to acquire in year one in that startup and thereafter up to that draft. First of all, like, people don't know what everybody's values are, but also getting those picks in a startup is generally like the cheapest way you're going to acquire picks, I feel like, except at the very top. But one way or another, I think it's easier to acquire them. So the risk is inherently lessened due to the price, right? Like, you didn't even have to pay as much most likely for these. You also could end up with way more picks in year one than most likely you'll ever end up in subsequent years, right? Like, there is obviously situations where you're going to tear your team down and end up with 7 picks. Like, yeah, that'll happen. But the majority of the time, you're going to have 4 picks, maybe 5, maybe 3, maybe two, because you traded him where you're trying to compete and all that, maybe zero, like Jake said. So I do think that that gets, you know, highlighted a lot more as the years go on. But definitely the picks, like your eye said, you need to hit on those as time goes on, because most likely your roster has been depleted over the years due to just age and attrition and all the other things, bad trades, whatever it may be. So you really do have to either hit on those or turn them into something that is a true asset, like Jake was talking about earlier. So it's a great conversation. I wanted you to bring it up because I think what you did is you said it during one of the draft reviews we were talking through, potentially, that we're putting out on the YouTube channels, and it struck me, and I wrote it down, and I was like, I want to talk about this for sure, because it was something that I just hadn't really thought through as much, and I just love that. So thank you.
This is one we talk about every year, and my opinion hasn't changed all that much. So how to handle FOB. Use it now, save it, use it later. I just say, hey, man, it's just like people with an abundance of wealth. Let's get all philosophical here. So, you know, you're old, you're gray, your body's running out, but your bank account's fat. Like, what's the point of, you can't take it with you. I've never been in a single league where FAB rolls over. So I say spend it early and often. I'd rather spend it on a couple of the rookies that I thought maybe should have been drafted in your rookie draft. Maybe they're, you know, maybe if you're in a 4-round rookie draft, these guys might have got drafted in the 5th round. There's still people that you want to pick up that have way more potential than any of the other waiver pieces that you're probably going to find, you know, at the end of September. Most likely. Every year there's always somebody. But I say go ahead and blow it, man. And also, just by being lazy in the overall bookkeeping of things, you could eliminate FAB waivers from multiple of leagues. And so when you're sitting there Tuesday night putting in your waivers, you can actually eliminate some leagues early on by taking the chances on the rookies that you're able to pick up with your FAB after the rookie draft. I know that sounds lazy, but it is kind of nice to have less teams to manage that aspect of things during the season.
Oh, I still put in a shit ton of waiver acquisitions with zero FAB left.
I don't give a shit.
Like, right? Like, there's a reality and a world where people forget, specifically the dudes who are dropped that Wednesday morning. Folks forget about the guys that were dropped to pick up somebody else. And there could be someone out there that's super, super valuable that you could get for literally $0. I actually have a caveat question, because I think it is really interesting that Uri brought this up. Let's say you do play in a league where FAB does roll over. What's the advantage of having some additional FAB for the following year to gain that advantage against your opponents? Is there any?
Oh, yeah, that would change my strategy a good deal, to be honest with you, because so I would be doing a lot more evaluation analysis on how I felt about the rookies that, or the rookies that fell out of the rookie draft that hit the waiver wire. Because, you know, getting back to like my whole point of bringing this up, we had a league where we had the first waiver run, a newer dynasty league, some people newer to it, and they were like, what are you spending money on this bench rookie for? And it's like, I value that as a 4th round pick. And so if I sent you 500 FAB right now for your 4th round pick next year, would you send me your 4th? Probably not. And so that's why it makes sense for me to spend the money on that 4th round or on that player, because that's how I value it, right? So it doesn't even need to go further than, do I think that there could be a player later in the year that could help me? Maybe. I don't care. Like, that's not what it's about. It's more of like a, you know, a cost benefit analysis, or like just it's seeing that there's really just this discrepancy in how people value these players. And I don't think anybody is looking at it that way. And so you could take advantage of that, right? But the rollover piece of it, I think, is really interesting, because a year like this year, where, you know, there's guys who I certainly want, but there's definitely nobody who I was as excited about coming out as like a Puka or as even Adele or anything like that. Like, I wasn't screaming to go pick up Jacob Cowling for $500. I'll still do it because I think it's, or like, you know, 2, 3, 4, whatever I think the market value is at that point, but I'll still do it. But I'm not like, you know, rushing to do that. So in those scenarios, I'd 100%, you know, look at the class, be like, is it really worth it? Maybe next year I find one of those guys. And the advantage is, yeah, I can outbid everybody next year on the guy that I want, on the Puka if he falls. And I'd be trying to really, not only would I be trying to potentially save some, but I would be more so looking to trade for it, because I assume it would be tradable at that point. And I would be looking, that would be a really tradable asset for me, or something I would want to acquire and think that most people still wouldn't value as much.
Awesome. The last thing I did want to say is I appreciate you not bringing up the fact that I was the one who was getting dunked on for spending all my fab in that league. I think I've been dunked on in the chat like a good 50 times already, between like not understanding my build, not understanding why I spent so much fab on players. But the other thing I will state, and you touched on it, but you didn't necessarily say it. And here's the thing that I really want to just hit on, is you are acquiring assets that you could easily flip for fourth rounders at bare minimum. Like, you're not even talking about waiting on the asset to accrue in value. You're talking about, I acquired the asset yesterday, I can sell it tomorrow for a fourth. Like, it's as simple as that. Jacob Cowling, a fourth. Malik Washington, a fourth. Dylan Lobb, a fourth. Like, these are dudes in other drafts who are getting drafted in their rookie drafts. It's a fourth. It's as simple as that. And if I can spend 400 fab or 40% or 30% fab on a fourth, sure, shit, I'm going to do that every single time. Because if I sent someone 30% of my fab for a fourth, they'd tell me to go F myself, right? Well, maybe not in this league, because they value it so much. I have no idea. So, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's the way that I'm looking at it. It's just like, why would I not want those assets on my team? Because I don't really care about a Dylan Lobb, but I do, because I had Zamir White, and then I traded away Zamir White, right? It's like, now I know that I have another asset that dude wants. I have his handcuff. I might even get additional value off of this dude. That's the way you have to think about these waiver acquisitions when you're submitting them.
All right, next one. Is it better to push to get a deal done or wait and be patient?
You know, if you see like a hole in the market, you see something that you're really trying to take advantage of, you don't want to miss the boat on it, right? Maybe it's like a Rashee Rice situation. Let's go with that kind of thing, where there's like his value's fluctuating and you don't want to miss out on it. Are you going to like push to get a deal done, or are you going to sit back and be patient and make sure you get the value that you think you should be getting for that trade?
I've never once really pushed to get a deal done. Maybe that's my problem, but... No, I mean, I feel pretty comfortable. I've never been like to the point where like I have to get this done. Yeah, I have to get this done, so I'm gonna have to throw this piece in. Like, no, I don't. Like, I don't have to do any of those things. So, I've always been a little bit more patient, and just typically have just accepted deals that like I'm perfectly comfortable with, and I don't feel like I had to stretch myself to make happen.
I've done both methods, and I think they both work, to be honest. And I find it to be really interesting. So I'm going to say this openly. I think if you're trying to sell, it's best to push. And if you're trying to buy, it's best to be patient. And here's the reason I say that. I think the psychological aspect of the buyer, it feels more... What's the word? It feels more immediate. It feels more enjoyable. It's, you know, the what is that word? Retail therapy aspect. Like, I'm getting a new asset on my team, and you can kind of manipulate them with that idea that like you're getting this new asset on your team in 20 minutes if we keep sending back offers left and right. Versus if I'm trying to acquire, let's say, that asset, I know that if I keep pushing to the person who's selling, they're going to be like, hey, F off. Like, I don't want to sell. And so when I'm in those two different, wearing those two different hats, I know that I kind of challenge kind of the psyche of the other person and how they're going into it.
That's interesting, because I do feel like you have to be, yeah, you definitely have to be reasoned about it, because like you push too hard, they're obviously going to notice no matter what. But I think sometimes when I have a need, I push too hard. Like, I've done this on quarterbacks. Like, I'll like rush to get this done and maybe sell a little, you know, or buy a little too high rather. And so I think I'd prefer to be patient. And I look at kind of the situation I have in one of the leagues right now, the one we were just talking about, where I've had somebody hit me in the DMs like, hey, your running back situation is just really rough, man. Like, you need a running back. You need to get, and I'm like, first of all, this hits it on both sides of it. He's pushing to a point where it's not in his benefit any longer. Like, I'm out. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to talk about this. I don't really want to negotiate with you. I have a bad taste in my mouth. But also on my end, it's a situation where I feel like I should be, you should be patient in general, right? Like, you don't need to be pushing to fix a situation. I'm thinking of this in kind of a lot of different ways, but you don't need to be pushing and rushing to fix your running back situation in the offseason. You know what I mean? So I think in general, the best tactic is to be patient, is to kind of, I talk about this even with sending trade offers out, right? Kind of wearing the opponent down, is just being kind of patient and keep pushing for what you know is true value and what you know you need to get in that specific situation. So that's kind of where I thought about it, or where it took me.
All right. One last one we have from Tommy. He was on this podcast a couple weeks ago. He's the Orphan Guru. He hangs out in our Discord with us, which is awesome. So he had a question. He said, it's very heady, of course. The guy thinks about Dynasty a different level than a lot of people do. So I've had a thought that the better managers reset the cadence of moves that are made. I'm curious how y'all try to stay in the front side of the assets and tiers that are moving in individual leagues, and how much intentionality you have of cascading your moves before you make them. Y'all are two heady guys. I'll let you take it.
I'm throwing it to Jake first. I really want to hear Jake's thoughts on this, because this one threw me a little bit for a loop when I first read it a couple times. But I do have some thoughts, but I'd love to hear Jake's thoughts on this.
And this is something that I am very conscientious of when I make trades. And I think the best example that I can talk through, just because you guys both know it, is what happened in DU2 this offseason. So basically, post Super Bowl, post championship, I make a huge trade. Jamar Chase, Tyreek Hill, a couple of future seconds for Trevor Lawrence, Puka Nacua, and a 26 first, I believe it was. And that, to me, is what Tommy is referring to as a reset or setting of cadence for the moves that are going to be made in the league at that point. And my biggest issue specifically in that league is that I didn't take advantage of what I was trying to do. So in that league, what happened there was the cascading effect of moves, specifically from two different managers. And I won't talk about their names, but I know that they went from basically like middle tier to complete rebuild in a matter of weeks because of the other trades that were happening in the league, which is exactly what you want from one of these massive trades. And so when those trades are occurring, you want to be able to then kind of manipulate that market gap of where those teams are kind of underselling their own assets. And I'm thinking back to, there were a couple of major ones, but there was a DJ Moore trade that happened where DJ Moore went for really cheap. George Kittle went for like a mid second. There were a couple of like top ends, like Cup, Mike Evans, like 204. Cup for and like Devonta a 26th
Adams.
Second.
And Devonta Adams
also for like a 25th second. Like, those are the types of things you want to be creating, right? And so in this situation, in my opinion, like, to truly be the better manager is you do that one big net fall trade, and then you then can take off those other, we don't even necessarily have to call them elite pieces, but roster defining pieces. If I add a George Kittle over, let's say on that roster, a Jake Ferguson, like, I'm improving my tight end position by at least 4 to 5 points per game, right? If I can change out DJ Moore with Keenan Allen, I now have an elite receiver as my wide receiver 4 moving forward versus, you know, a 31-year-old elite receiver. Like, those are the types of ways in which I try to think about resetting and setting the cadence of moves throughout the leagues. And sometimes I'm not successful, right? Like, there are plenty of times where I try this, and I'll talk about DU3 really quickly. I tried to do this recently and I was basically laughed off of it, but I tried to trade Bijan Robinson for Jonathan Taylor and two future picks, thinking that I can now reset the running back market because I know that I'm really, really low in running back depth in that league. It didn't work out. I got laughed off the field and didn't get a counter either, which, you know, it happens. But like, those are the types of moves that I know are going to make other owners who have running backs feel like they need to get off of the asset if they think that the, let's say, Jonathan Taylor was sold at really, really high value, or Bijan was sold at a really, really low value, depending on however you're perceiving it, is going to have that cascading effect on the rest of the market.
Now, that makes a lot of sense. And I don't think I'm as intentional as I could be, like, in terms of planning for all the other, for essentially planning for the other teams, right? Generally, like, I think back to console wars, because I've definitely done this a number of times in console wars where I've kind of intentionally tiered in a direction to then further that, you know, those moves generally up the ladder. And the plan is much more based around my team and what I'm trying to do, but focusing on kind of the other teams is actually really important and something I think I need to do going forward. I've probably taken advantage of, especially in DU2, like thinking back to the trades you were just talking about, I took advantage of those, but not really understanding that it was caused both by the other trade and that I could take advantage of those teams' situation, right? And I think that's what you're kind of trying to hone in on, and something that we need to be much more intentional about just as managers in general, is like when you're making a move, understanding the effects that that's going to have, use this word, cascading down across that manager's team, the other manager's teams that may get involved, and especially your own. So, I mean, it's a really interesting concept to think about. I think one part of it that I do really do intentionally is kind of like trying to be really conscientious just of like the transition periods of players and positions, and getting ahead of those, right? Understanding my own players, kind of where their threshold limits are, kind of if they're going to kind of reach that tier, and getting ahead of it, be ahead of the market and moving on from those players. And I really try to do that often, but I think what Tommy's kind of getting at here is, do you take it a step further and look at the downstream effects of what you're doing, right? And I don't think we do often enough. I certainly don't do that often enough. And it's no surprise to me that Jake does it more often than myself and Uriah, because Tommy and him think really similarly. I've said this many times before. I think you guys really think similarly and outside the box. So yeah, that's why I wanted you to lead off a little bit, because I knew you were going to take it in the right direction.
Yeah, if I could just add one additional thing just for the thought process of our listeners. There's a time that I don't think you should try and do this, and it's during a draft. I don't think you should try and do it during a startup draft, and I don't think you should try and do it during a rookie draft. And the reason I say that is because these moves get lost. They get lost in the scale of the draft itself, and regardless of whether or not they're going to change the way in which people value those individual players, I think it has a much more nano impact on the league itself rather than these macro moves that could happen during kind of those standard stagnation periods where people are not thinking about their league necessarily. And that's when you kind of want to go in and kind of reset the way in which people are valuing their players, especially when you can kind of take major advantage of them.
Yeah, there's not enough time, I think, like you're saying, to let the moves breathe, to actually get in between them and like, you know, make an impact. But I do think you can affect the board. It's different. It's just a different way. And it's more, it's a slower kind of impact that's happening, and something that you're kind of trying to sit and wait for things to fall to you based on moves that are made and whatnot. But I don't think you can kind of jump in the middle there as much as you can when you're making trades and have time to kind of think and work on negotiating.
That was a very heady question, Tommy, and we appreciate it. I'm glad you guys took that on, because I don't think my memory is sharp enough to even, yeah, I couldn't do what these guys do.
Well, we do have the Dynasty Historian here. I mean, we did
the Dynasty Historian. Yeah,
we didn't necessarily unveil it at the top of the show, which we really should have. But yeah, Jake's new Twitter name over here, the Dynasty Historian, really, really fits, I think, his characteristics when it comes to being a dynasty manager. It does, because like the way that he breaks down each league is really unique. Something that I've been trying to do more often myself, and that like he literally helps me do by having more conversations with him. I'm like, oh shit, I know a lot more about this league than I would have if I didn't talk to you today. So it's something that we all can take from Jake, and it's really an important piece of being a dynasty manager and being a successful one long term.
What's happened to some trades and some non-trades? We have DJ Moore, 25 fourth for Trey Benson, 25 first, which is projected to be mid to late, and a 26 second. I mean, I think right now, honestly, just the short answer, I think DJ Moore is an asset right now that I think is probably easily move offable if that's what you want to do. And I think in a rookie running back with potential to be the starter at the end of the season, maybe moving forward after this season, and a first and a future second, I think I'd move off of DJ Moore for that.
Yeah, I like this trade a lot for the Benson side. You know, I see Benson as a high second. You can see this as kind of like two first value for Moore. You know, get to throw the fourth in there. I think this is just like a pretty fair deal, to be honest. I do like the 25 first side. I just think there's a little bit more liquidity there. I really like Trey Benson. If he hits, you're going to really love that side, I think. But is DJ Moore kind of a buy at some level? Like, if you can get DJ Moore for a little bit less than this, I think you're cooking. Like, if you can do like a 25 first, second, and third and get DJ Moore, like, I'm doing that pretty much every day of the week. You know, there's a real possibility that Keenan Allen gets injured or something. And even if not, like, it's a really good situation for DJ Moore. He's the number one wide receiver here, no matter what anyone wants to believe. That's how I feel about it. And I feel like he can have a really good season despite, you know, being with a rookie quarterback. There's definitely risk there. And I think that the Benson piece really covers that risk. But I think DJ Moore on his own could be a potential buy, just kind of looking at this deal and thinking you could massage it a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, this was my trade. That's why I shut the fuck up and didn't say anything. I think like the biggest thing too is thinking about, as you know, that transitory period that Billy was also talking about. We're talking about a wide receiver who's 27, will be 28, start the next NFL season. And the reason I already skip over to 28 is that I'm a tanking team. I'm not competing this year. How do I get off this player for the most amount of value that I think I can then flip in a tanking team, in a rebuild? And I find myself in a situation where if I'm acquiring these first, I can kind of put myself in a situation to acquire those elite assets that we're going to talk about in like this next upcoming trade. So I'll just kind of jump into it. CJ Stroud, Sam Laporta for the 101, 110, 111, 202, 212, and 25 second, which we can project probably still going to be early.
Yeah. Whew. Caleb, baby. Moving Caleb. Oh, man. Caleb, like a Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy kind of thing. Maybe just both those guys. Maybe a Trey Benson. You know, there's a lot of value on that side. But, man, getting Laporta and CJ Stroud back, that's pretty good value. The way I kind of break this down is that 101 in those seconds for Stroud and then the two first for Laporta. And I feel pretty good about that breakdown right there. Like, I mean, any way you slice this, I think if you split it between the two players and kind of, you know, group the picks with them, you're gonna come out feeling pretty good about it. Just given the fact that this is basically trading, you know, a ton of mystery boxes for two absolutely elite assets in Dynasty. The arguable number one tight end, if you want to, you know, go that route, but definitely top three in Dynasty. And then you got a, you know, top six quarterback here, however you want to slice it, with CJ Stroud. I mean, it's fantastic. I love it. I traded for CJ. This is our Console Wars League. I also traded for CJ Stroud, and this reminded me a lot of it, but you got him. You got these pieces for cheaper than I got CJ Stroud, I think. So
yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Not to rub it in. I
No. You definitely did. I mean, I didn't give up anything as great as the 101, I don't think. But I gave up more valuable and known commodities than you did, right? Like, you gave up a bunch of stuff that if they become what I gave up, like, you, this guy would be absolutely elated. But it's unlikely that happens. So, yeah.
Yeah. And in the same regard, to your point, one of the reasons why I wanted to do this trade and the reason I wanted to put it on the list is, first and foremost, if I do decide to go back into like true reset, I'm going to be able to get way more for those two assets than I gave up. Like, and I know that for a fact. So I don't have to worry about, you know, the cost of this investment. The acquisition cost isn't high enough for me to be concerned. Oh, maybe I'm going to stick in my rebuild. I don't know. I know for a fact that I have two elite assets that I'm going to be able to get off of whenever I want to. The liquidity is 100% there. Secondly, this is one of those trades where I actually wanted to intentionally hide their value, if that makes sense. So this was a trade that I only wanted to get done before the draft actually started. I think I got it done about 48 hours before the draft. And I kind of told the other owner that I was just like, dude, like, if you don't give me like a solid offer for the 101, like, we're not gonna be able to get this done because this trade, I think, actually, considering how heavy it is, I think it gets masked by the other 40 bajillion trades that have happened since the draft has started. And the reason I bring that up is because I do think that I did get both of these players for really cheap, and I want people to not remember that. So when they come out and try and buy these players off of me, they're not going to remember, dude, you got, you know, CJ Stroud for basically the 101, 110, and the 202, we'll call it. Like, oh, you sold LaPorta for a late first in 2 seconds? Like, are you joking me? Like, that's not what I want people to remember, because when you get discounts on players, people remember that. And so I needed to be conscientious of when this trade was going down, and that's kind of my logic of the timing of it.
No, that's a great point. And also, you did it probably over a month after, I think maybe 2 months after I got mine done, which I reset the market on CJ Stroud, but you waited long enough for that to fade in everybody's memory. And that's like a really good point. Like, you can set the market on certain players, but that's only going to last for so long, and you can, and those markets are only going to be able to be taken advantage of for so long. So if you do see that happen, right, like Jake, it wasn't advantageous for Jake, so he just waited it out. But if it went the other way and I got CJ Stroud, like, somebody should be going after CJ Stroud right now. The other, you know, the other, my CJ Stroud, which I'm not giving up, but the other asset as well, right? Like, cause there's three of them in this league, the three copies, and the setting of markets is highlighted so much more in a three copy league, obviously, because you can literally attack those things when they happen. But I don't think you see many people in this league do that, and they're missing a key strategy point in a multi-copy league, right? And I think this can, this also is, it happens positionally in non-multi-copy leagues, like where, you know, somebody buys a JT for way too low or something like that. And now, you know, the players around JT start, you know, catching that stigma of being a little bit lower value than they should, and you can go attack those quickly, but it only lasts so long is kind of my point. So it's a really key strategy piece, I think, that we don't really touch on too often. So I like that one.
All right, next one. Cooper Kupp for Amari Cooper. Cooper for Cooper. But Amari comes with a 25 second and a 25 foot.
I mean, I thought this was a pretty awesome deal for the Amari Cooper side. Like, I mean, I love Kupp as much as the next guy, but he's a year older than Cooper. He has Puka in front of him. Cooper is the guy, not in front of him, but he has Puka next to him. Let's say that. Amari Cooper is the guy. I mean, we have Jerry Jeudy there. Say what you want about Jeudy, but Amari Cooper is the man. and he has Watson most likely coming back. Really good quarterback. Good enough quarterback. I'll rein that in a little bit. Good enough quarterback. But then you get the 25 second added on top of it. And I think that that's a really key piece of this. This allows you basically to kind of, you know, move sideways with one asset, but gain future capital, right? Like, and honestly, you gain a year back here potentially. A year or two potentially with Cooper's age, but at the very least, you know, this is a really, like, maybe you're moving within a tier kind of deal here, but you're getting a second on top, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, I agree.
Smash accept, dude. Like, we talked about Kupp going for 25 and 26 seconds only a couple months ago, and I don't think that the market necessarily is that far off of that still, and to be able to get Cooper on top of a feature second, it's great. It's a great trade.
Just for reference, looking at our rankings, I have Mark Cooper highlighted there. If you just go down a couple, you'll find Cooper Kupp there at 79. So, and similar tier. So, you know, you're seeing that kind of play out within the rankings as well. And when you see how close they are to have to add a second and a fourth to get the younger guy who's ahead, like, the mark was missed on this trade. At least for one side of it. The other guy got a smash deal. So, love that.
Next one, Spencer Radler, Jalen Polk for Deontay Johnson and a 26 third. I'll be quick. I love Deontay, and I like what could happen there in Carolina. I might be more optimistic than most people, but I think I'm just going to go with the quarterback.
You're going to you're going to go with the Radler side?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I mean, that's
I think
fair.
I'll take the quarterback still.
That's fair. I'll probably roll with the Deontay side. I think he's perennially undervalued. You're getting a third on top of it, which, you know, unless Rattler turns out to be a starting quarterback in this league, that's going to...
26 third.
it's fine, 26th, third, whatever. It could be 27th, third. I don't care. Deontay over Polk easily, right? Like, easily. Yes. I don't think Polk, you know, even if Polk hits his heights, like, is he even Deontay? I think Deontay is a much more athletic player. I think he's proven to be, you know, one of the top route runners in the league. Polk may be a good player, but I don't think he's going to reach that kind of status. So, yeah, I'll take the Deontay side here personally.
Yeah, I think from a liquidity standpoint, you're talking about probably depreciating asset in Deontay right now, who was probably teetering at late first at some point last year, now touching probably mid to early second. But funny enough, I think Polk is in already a weird depreciating point where day after the rookie draft happened, you started seeing him go mid second. I'm now starting to see him 2 weeks after going touching the top of the third. Like, you're talking about a dude that folks just don't feel confident about, and acquiring assets like that are just not dudes who I want. I don't even need to like the guy personally. Like, I told Billy this about, I acquired Keon Coleman in the league. Like, I acquire people that I know other people want. I don't acquire people that I know people hate. And Jalen Polk is one of those. And I just try and get away from that personally, unless I really know something on top of everybody else, which, you know, if you listen to Uriah and I last year, we talked a lot about Rashee Rice before he blew up. We talked a lot about Dontavian Wicks before he blew up. So, you know, there are dudes to take advantage of that others don't like. I'm not telling you that, but Polk hasn't ran a route in the NFL yet. So this isn't the time for me to be buying him on the low. I want to watch him run a route for Drake May or Jacoby Brissett and tell myself maybe there's value there while he's catching, you know, three passes for 18 yards 6 weeks in a row. That's when I'm going to be buying Jalen Polk.
I mean, I will say, like, outside of this trade, like, I wouldn't mind buying some Polk. I have zero shares, and that's not, like, necessarily the place you want to be all the time, especially if you have a decent amount of leagues. So the fact that his value is dipping and I could get him for cheaper, maybe that is something that is a little enticing, because the way I'm looking at it is his value is almost guaranteed, unless he's just a bad player, his value is almost guaranteed to increase once Drake May hits the field. Like, if he's playing well at all, even with Jacoby Brissett, then the value is going to kind of skyrocket, I think, when Drake May hits the field. So you're going to have this known time period where his value does increase. So I think that if you can get him on the low end, which is probably right now, like you're saying, I mean, his value, he's like the 22nd overall pick in startups right now on average per Dynasty Data Lab. So I don't know if that's really what the value is after the draft. Like, I wonder if people feel a little less encouraged, you know, once he's on their roster and they're looking at him than when they picked him. I don't know. But I could see myself being interested in grabbing a couple of shares just for that boost in value that I see, you know, potentially happening.
Anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here?
That's all I got.
Jake?
No, I love it here, man. I do. I love it here. We love you here. And I hate it. I hate it in League of Legends. I hate it there.
Oh my goodness, dude. Yeah, it's a riot in there.
It's cool. At least now I know who to run by all my trade offers with first, Mr. Enfuego, because apparently he's the only one that knows what a good trade is.
Yo, you, when you have that league mate who's basically judging every single trade that happens in the league chat, I mean, it's pretty hilarious. Like, it's
like he's been playing his whole life. So
it's vibes. It is true vibes. I love it.
Straight vibes. Yeah. No, I love good league banter. I'm sorry. I think it keeps the energy going, man. Like, it's kind of like console wars. We have that in there too. Ton of people just going at it. Same with the Discord, right? We always have banter. Like, it's the same stuff. Like, I just, that communal vibe, that camaraderie, it's, I don't know, it builds it and it builds that energy, and it's always more fun that way.
Speaking of the Discord, hop in. Link for it should be on our Twitter bio, which is at Dynasty Underdog. Mine's at Uriah Dawkins. Billy's at Willie Beeman. FF. Jake is at Jake Abrams. Listen to us on Spotify if you can. Check out the YouTube channel. It's popping. Other than that, y'all have a great night.
They not like us. 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 You think the pay gonna let you